your home run of your life.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom,
ball game over.
We are often reminded that things can change in an instant. This is true in baseball as well as in life. On May 7, 1957, a young, talented pitcher with a golden arm named Herb Score would learn this lesson the hard way. I'm Nina Instead, and this is Dead Ball. Herbert Jude Score was born June 7, 1933, in Rosedale, Queens, New York. Herb was the oldest of three children. The others were sisters Helen and Anna May, born to Herbert A. Score, a New York City police officer, and his wife, Anne Score. Herb Score overcame adversity and injury from childhood to old age. At the age of three, he was run over by a truck that broke his legs below the pelvis. Doctors were afraid he would never walk again, but the bones settled back into place on their own. A few years later, he contracted rheumatic fever and was bedridden for 10 months. In high school, Herb fractured his left ankle playing basketball and, with the cast still on, had an emergency appendectomy. His mother, Anne, was a devout Catholic, and she gave her son the middle name Jude in honor of St. Jude, the patron saint of lost causes. Both Anne and her son felt praying had helped Herb overcome his many adversities. The young athlete started playing baseball at Holy Name of Mary School in Rosedale as an outfielder, but the team needed a pitcher, and he was quick to volunteer. This was a fateful decision. The next year, his mother and father separated, and Herb and his mother moved to Lake Worth, Florida. He threw six no-hitters for Lake Worth Community High School's baseball team and led the school to its only state baseball championship. Herb Score's pitching prowess soon spread far and wide. He was scouted by the Cleveland Indians, who had signed another hard-throwing pitcher, Bob Feller, back in 1936. Herb signed his contract June 7, 1952, with a $60,000 bonus for signing. His first professional pitching was with Indianapolis of the American Association, where he made 10 starts with a 2-5 one-loss record. He only allowed 37 hits in 62 innings, but he walked 62. In 1953, Score was sent to Class A Reading, Pennsylvania in the Eastern League. There he met his soon-to-be lifelong friend and roommate, Rocky Colavito. At Reading, Herb Score was 7-3, giving up only 64 hits in 98 innings, but walking 126 batters. But again, an injury cut short his year. While shagging fly balls, he landed on his pitching shoulder and separated his collarbone from the joint. While off, he completed his credits for Lake Worth High School and received his diploma. In 1954, Herb, Rocky, and their Reading manager, Kirby Farrell, moved up to AAA Indianapolis. While the parent club in Cleveland won a record 111 games and went to the World Series in 54, Score set some records himself. He produced a 22-win, 5-loss record, gave up 140 hits in 251 innings, and had a league-low 2.62 ERA, set an American Association record 330 strikeouts, and gave up only 140 walks. He was named American Association's Most Valuable Player and Sporting News Minor League Player of the Year. 1955 saw Score make the Major League Cleveland Indians roster, and he was named Sporting News Rookie of the Year in the American League. He led both leagues with 245 strikeouts, breaking the rookie record of 227 set by the Phillies' Grover Cleveland Alexander back in 1911. He held that record till 1984 when Dwight Gooden of the Mets struck out 276 batters. He finished the season with a 16-10 record and a 2.85 ERA and was named the American League All-Star team, but did not pitch in the game. 1956 was another stellar year for Score, finishing with a 20-win, 9-loss record, led the league with 263 strikeouts, and led the team with a 2.53 ERA. He was the first pitcher in the modern era to strike out over 200 batters in his first two seasons in the league. he made the American League All-Star team again and pitched one scoreless inning. But the team finished second again to the Yankees, as they had in 1955. In the 1956 offseason, Boston general manager Joe Cronin offered Cleveland general manager Hank Greenberg $1 million for Herb Score, but Greenberg refused the offer. The future of the hard-throwing left-hander and the Cleveland Indians looked bright. Herb Score was on his way to stardom in the major leagues. That all changed, however, in one devastating moment, when Herb Score's career and the Cleveland Indians' future seemed to fall apart all at once. There were many who felt that the 1957 baseball season would come down to the New York Yankees and the Cleveland Indians for the American League pennant. The Yankees had the power, and the Indians, led by Herb Score, had the pitching. The Yankees met up with the Tribe on May 7, 1957 at Cleveland Stadium in the first of a two-game set. The Yankees were atop the American League with a 12-5 record, while the Indians were 8-8. New York was riding a six-game winning streak. The pitching matchup was New York right-hander Tom Sturtevant against Herb Score. Now, Herb Score started the 1957 season with a 2-1 record with a 2.04 ERA. He had struck out 10 or more batters in three of his starts. Sturtevant took to the hill for the visitors with a 1-1 record. The Yankees right fielder Hank Bauer led off the game against Herb and grounded out to Indians third baseman Al Smith. The next batter to step into the batter's box was the Yankees shortstop, Gil McDougald. New York Yankees infielder Gil McDougald led a life of accomplishment both on and off the field. During his 10 seasons in pinstripes, McDougald was the 1951 American League Rookie of the Year, a five-time All-Star team selection, and a member of eight American League pennant winners. Although often overshadowed by Cooperstown-bound teammates like Mickey Mantle, Yogi Berra, and Whitey Ford, McDougald was the glue that held together the Bombers infield of the 1950s. He handled fielding duties expertly, whether stationed at second, shortstop, or third base. He was also a capable batter, particularly in clutch situations and at World Series time. Quiet and self-effacing, but fiercely competitive, McDougald was admired by teammates, opposing players, the baseball press, and fans alike. Off the field, McDougald was a man of sterling character, a religiously devout father of seven who regularly engaged in civic and charitable work, focusing particularly on helping underprivileged children and supporting the athletic activities of the Catholic Youth Organization. But sadly, on this day in May 1957, McDougald would become best known for a single tragic incident. Gil McDougald stepped into the batter's box with one out in the top of the first inning. Herb Score started McDougald with a breaking ball that was just a bit outside. McDougald fouled off the next two pitches. Score again missed with a breaking ball a few inches off the plate. When Herb Score let go of the 2-2 fastball, he had no way of knowing that his life was about to change forever. The pitch was low on the outside corner. McDougald, a low fastball hitter, swung hard. Although bat velocity was not measured in 1957, experts would later claim the ball came off McDougald's bat at over 110 miles per hour. The hard line drive was headed directly at Herb Score's head, just 60 feet and 6 inches away. Before Herb could raise his glove, the baseball struck him between the nose and right eye. Herb dropped to the ground as if he had been shot. The impact of the ball hitting the young Cleveland pitcher could be heard throughout the stadium. Radio listeners would also claim to have heard the terrifying noise through their sets. Immediately, the crowd in Cleveland went deadly silent, knowing they had just witnessed something horrific. Meanwhile, the ball had hit Score so hard that it ricocheted all the way up to Cleveland's third baseman, Al Smith, 90 feet away, who threw out McDougald. Score fell to the ground, and players from both teams rushed to his aid. First baseman Vic Wirtz ran to the mound as well after taking the throw from Smith. When he got within 10 feet of score, he turned, shoulders sagging. It was not a good indication of what he saw. As players and coaches gathered around the fallen pitcher, a call went out over the public address system for a doctor to come to the field. Herb Score was taken off the field by a stretcher and subsequently transported to Lakeside Hospital. I didn't see the ball until it was a foot or two from my face, Score said afterward. Then I saw too much of it. I never did lose consciousness, even as I fell to the ground. I knew I was on the ground and I could feel the blood. Then people seemed to come at me from all sides. Now, attendance for this game was 18,386 people. Cleveland broadcaster Jimmy Dudley recalled, "The crowd was in total silence, like a funeral parlor when the priest shows up." The crowd looked on in stunned horror as their 24-year-old left-handed pitcher was carried off the field. Many of the old-timers in the crowd no doubt thought back to August 16, 1920, when a young Cleveland infielder, Ray Chapman, was killed after being hit with a pitched ball from Yankee right-hander Carl Mays. Despite the tragedy and the uncertainty of Score's fate, the game went on. Bob Lemon took the hill in place of the fallen Score. The game had to progress, even if it was played under the pallor of gray. For six innings, Tom Sturtevant and Bob Lemon took turns posting zeros on the scoreboard. In the top of the seventh inning, Elston Howard led off with a single to left. After a sacrifice bunt by Andy Carey and a ground out by Sturtevant, Howard advanced to third base. Bauer hit a ground ball to third directly at Smith, but the ball took a high hop over Smith and landed in left field. Howard scored and the Yankees led 1-0. Cleveland evened the score with a tally in the bottom of the inning. Cleveland first baseman Wirtz led off with a single to right field. A young Roger Maris, with the Indians at the time, but he would later gain fame as a Yankee, was hit by a pitch. Rocky Colavito laid down a bunt to third baseman Carey, but Carey's throw to first base was dropped by second baseman Billy Martin. Wirtz came home with the tying run, and Maris went to third, but the Indians could not add any more runs. The Tribe took the lead and ultimately won the game in the bottom of the eighth inning. With one out, Gene Woodling nailed a single to center field. Al Smith popped up to right field. The ball dropped in front of Yankees outfielder Hank Bauer, who thought Martin was going to make the play. Bauer drew an error from the official scorer as Smith reached first base safely. Sturtevant gave Wirtz an intentional pass to load the bases, and after Maris struck out, Rocky Colavito walked to force in the winning run. Sturtevant was unfortunately on the short end of the stick in this game. Both Indians' runs were unearned, and Sturtevant struck out 9 Cleveland batters in 8 innings of work. Lemon raised his record to 2-3 with the win. But the details of the game were not on the minds of players. All thoughts were on Herb Score. Gil McDougald sat by himself in the Yankees clubhouse. He was inconsolable, and he promised to quit baseball if Score did not pull through. Meanwhile, at the hospital, Score was being examined. Because there was so much hemorrhaging around his eye, a complete prognosis could not be made quickly. Dr. Charles Thomas, an eye specialist, examined Score. "The eye will be saved," said Dr. Thomas. "It is beginning to clear up. I can't yet tell the full extent of the damage. Because of the eye hemorrhage, it is like looking through fog. Fortunately, the ball struck him flush. It caught the top of the eyebrow bone, the cheekbone, and the nose. The nose was fractured. It appears the bone fracture of his face absorbed most of the impact that would have destroyed the eye." Gil McDougald, Hank Bauer, and Yogi Berra went to visit Herb after the game. But Dr. Thomas ordered quiet and bed rest for Score, which meant no visitors. "All the Yankees feel terrible because Score is such a nice guy," Berra said. Ann Score, Herb's mother, lived down in Florida, and she reached out to Gil McDougald to console him. Score said that his injury was part of the game, and he held no ill will toward McDougald. Miraculously, Herb Score recovered, and he returned to the pitching mound in 1958, but his fastball, once the envy of the league, was gone. When he threw his fastball, the pain in his arm was unbearable. He changed his motion, and he was never the same again. Quote, The reason my motion changed was because I hurt my elbow, and I overcompensated for it and ended up with some bad habits. Herb would say much later, I didn't throw quite as hard before my arm injury, but what killed me was that my ball no longer moved. It went up to home plate as straight as an arrow. There were many who thought Score was pitching defensively, fearing being hit by another line drive. But Score himself rejected the theory. He said he injured his arm in early 58, and it was the arm injury and not the head injury that would cost him his career. Herb Score pitched parts of the next few seasons, retiring in 1962, never achieving his tremendous promise. Herb Score compiled a 55-46 win-loss record with a 3.36 ERA. He struck out 837 batters and 858.1 innings. After his retirement in 1962 and starting in 1964, he was employed as a television and radio play-by-play announcer with the Cleveland Indians, and he would do this work for the next 34 years. First on television from 64 to 67, and then on the radio from 1968 until 1997. He had the longest career for any Indians play-by-play announcer. Score was revered by Indians fans for his announcing style, including a low voice and a low-key style, as well as a habit of occasionally mispronouncing the names of players on opposing teams. Herb Score's final Major League Baseball game as an announcer was Game 7 of the 1997 World Series. On October 8, 1998, while driving to Florida after being inducted into the Broadcasters Hall of Fame the night before, Herb Score was severely injured in a traffic accident. He had pulled into the path of a westbound tractor-trailer truck near New Philadelphia, Ohio, and his car was struck in the passenger side. He suffered trauma to his brain, chest, and lungs. The orbital bone around one of his eyes was fractured, as were three ribs and his sternum. He spent over a month in the ICU and was released from MetroHealth Hospital in mid-December. He was also cited for failure to stop at a stop sign. He endured a difficult recovery, but managed to throw out the first pitch at the Indians' opening day game on April 12, 1999. Herbert Jude Score suffered a stroke in 2002, and he died on November 11, 2008, at his home in Rocky River after a lengthy illness. He is buried at the Lakewood Park Cemetery in Rocky River. The Indians wore a memorial patch on their uniform during the 2009 season to honor him. The young pitcher who held so much promise is still a beloved figure to Cleveland baseball fans. Thank you for listening to Dead Ball. To learn more about the show and connect with like-minded baseball fans, please visit the Dead Ball Podcast group on Facebook.
Bigger home run in your life.
Fly ball deep left center. Grissom.
Ball game over.